This is 89.1 WEMU, and I'm David Fair. On Wednesday evening, President Joe Biden addressed a joint session of Congress, albeit more sparsely attended because of COVID concerns. The Republican response to the address was delivered by Republican Senator Tim Scott. Both were well presented and neither swayed anyone about anything from either side of the aisle. 12th District Congresswoman Debbie Dingell was on hand for the president's address, and the Democrat is now on the other end of the WEMU live line. Representative Dingell, thank you for joining us again today.
Good morning, David. Good morning, everybody, and TGIF. That is Friday.
Indeed, indeed. A primary focus of the interview of the address from President Biden was the American Jobs Plan, a plan that has your full-throated support. The state of Michigan has long benefited from that kind of Buy American mantra. In your opinion, how does Michigan further benefit should this be passed into law?
Well, I mean, Michigan's going to benefit in several different ways. I mean, the first of all part of the American Jobs Plan is to fix our roads and bridges. So to quote our governor, it's time to fix the damn roads. We also have seen during this pandemic the disparity in broadband and what it has done to children both in rural areas and urban areas that don't have access to it. So we would build out broadband to make it equally accessible throughout the country in equal access. We would replace lead in water pipelines, which in Michigan we understand better probably than almost any state in the country. So there are very, very immediate things that we would recognize. But I also think, and I have said to the governor and to the delegation, we also need to make sure that Michigan is positioned to make sure we are ready to fight for those jobs, to locate manufacturing here. You know, yesterday you know how you know life's getting back to normal? I was sitting on a plane on a runway that had a mechanical problem. I was more than 2 hours late, and I said, this is life back to normal, a Delta plane with a mechanical problem. And I say that jokingly. They were
of course
great. But I started getting texts about General Motors and the announcement they made yesterday, which I did not have a heads up, nor did Rory Gamble, that $1 billion was going to be invested in Mexico for electric vehicles. My point, and actually the president made it Wednesday night when he gave that joint session, we need to spend American dollars on American jobs. And I am working very intentionally and very intersectionally that we need to not keep pitting people against each other, labor unions against environmentalists, but be intentional about creating good-paying jobs in this country. And I feel very strongly, David, that not one American taxpayer dollar should go to any job being located overseas.
The Republican, your Republican colleagues, say this is just a measure that is far too broad, and they point to some economic studies that show the plan, in concert with corporate tax increases, will actually cost American jobs and slow the economy. So what is your strategy in turning that perspective around?
So I'm being very intentional, and whether they recognized it or not, General Motors sort of helped. It became a symbol yesterday of what we shouldn't be doing. We have 55 American corporations that aren't paying taxes, and they're using the tax code to incentivize to locate overseas. That's not right. They should pay their fair share, and we shouldn't be using our tax dollars to help a U.S. company locate overseas. You know, if we create good-paying jobs and keep them here in the United States, those are workers that are just paying their fair share of taxes. Joe Biden's not going to increase their taxes, but they're going to have a job. They're going to be able to work. We've seen millions of women have to leave the workforce in the last year. I met with women last week here, Michigan, one of them working two jobs, making the equivalent still of less than $15 an hour, and child care for her, the lowest she could find was $18 an hour. We need to address the child care issue. These are issues that help us operate more efficiently as both a country, but as systems, as companies. So what we do, we need to be intentional about. I mean, we spend more money on health care than any other nation in the world and have worse outcomes. And we know a significant part of those costs are an inefficient bureaucracy. We need to go in and look at the current systems we have and not tax more people tax corporations, tax the billionaires as far as I'm concerned. But we need to make some of the current taxes and current systems, processes, jobs we have more efficient and make sure people have jobs so they can pay taxes.
And again, on those perspectives, there is a broad split among the parties in power. I want to discuss the tone and tenor of the Biden address and Senator Tim Scott's response on behalf of the Republicans. There was a calm in these presentations that has all too frequently been missing in national politics, but I was still left feeling as though the president's message was, we would love to listen and work with Republicans, but this is the path and we'll do it with or without you. And in return, with the same call for unity and bipartisanship, the Republican message was, try it, Mr. President, and the filibuster will become our best friend. In the conversations you've had with your colleagues on both sides of the aisle since these presentations, do you have any sense of a greater willingness to compromise?
You know, there are a lot of preliminary conversations going on, people talking within their caucuses. By the way, there is an agreement in the Republican caucus among Republicans, and there's not agreement, total agreement in the Democratic caucus between Democrats. Joe Biden's going to have to roll up his sleeves and work, and I'm going to have to roll up my sleeves and work so I'm protecting our American auto worker, but having them know that I want to make sure their job is here, but we got to worry about the environment at the same time. I talked to actually a number of my Republicans this week, and I'm looking for things that we can work together on. What do they think? We're going to have, you know, one of the areas that I'm very focused on, as you can tell, is electric vehicles. I was talking to everybody about the hearing we're going to have next week as we go into it. How do we work together? How do we build out that infrastructure? How do we upgrade the electrical grid? We have to upgrade it by 50%. And, you know, Texas is a Republican state. They don't want to see what happened last winter happen there either. So there may be more conversations going on than you realize.
Our conversation with Michigan's 12th District Congressional Representative Debbie Dingell continues on 89.1 WEMU. Another of the topics covered in the presidential address and Republican response was race. Some have criticized Senator Scott of emphatically stating that America is not racist, but he did so after running off a list of personal experiences in which he was subjected to blatant racism and bigotry. Do you consider America racist?
David, I guess I'm getting tired of questions that automatically pit us against each other. If you're black in America, you heard Senator Scott. He's had a lot of experiences that you and I, as Caucasians, white man and woman, don't experience. And, you know, I was watching Law and Order last night, and I didn't sleep last night. It made me think again about innate biases that we may have that we don't even think about, but none of us wants to be called a racist. We try to treat everybody fairly. So we have to have these uncomfortable conversations. We have to realize that other people may not be treated the way that we think that they should be treated. And how do we have, I also listened to Karen Bass on television last Sunday, who said we got to figure out how to have these conversations without people feeling defensive, without people wanting to feel like they've done something wrong, and just an ability to think about where we are on a number of really difficult issues.
So, on a specific subject matter, President Biden called for the Senate to pass the George Floyd Justice in Policing Act in the next month. It's already passed the House. It's a measure drafted by fellow members of your party of Democrats. While negotiations continue now, Senator Scott pointed out that in June of 2020, he introduced a police reform bill called the Justice Act. Democrats complained it didn't go far enough, and there is certainly more reforms included in the George Floyd Justice and Policing Act, but Democrats wouldn't even take up his measure. There was an opportunity for negotiation, compromise, amendments, and additions, and a movement towards the stated desire of both parties for bipartisanship. but it seems gamesmanship won out. It's not a new phenomenon in politics, but why is party power and control and the desire to claim legislative victory seemingly growing and at the expense of serving the public?
Well, I actually maybe don't even agree with you that that's partially what's driving the inability to come to agreement. I do think that this session of Congress, there's much more of a focus on people trying to find a common ground. I think the George Floyd bill is a very difficult bill. I did support it, but I also think, and I've been very clear on this in the last few weeks, and it's been very interesting, the reaction of what I said. I think it's a false choice between racial justice and public safety. And the difficulty in the George Floyd Justice Act is, how do you hold police officers accountable for their individual behavior? How do you make sure that police, that law enforcement agencies don't enable somebody to keep having poor performances, to keep having incidences? They're not reported. They're transferred to another police department. And how do you ensure that they're liable? There's right now there's indemnification, and there's a lot of discussion in there are real discussions going on. Karen Bass and Fred Upton are very much, I want you to know, it's one of the Democratic leaders and a Republican leader, have been very much part of these discussions. But, you know, there even becomes an issue if someone should be held accountable and that there have been damages. Does an individual law enforcement officer even have access to assets, or should it be that law enforcement agency? They're real conversations. They're hard conversations. We need to have them. But I have to tell you, on this issue, I know that they're very difficult, real discussions going on.
Once again, we're talking with Congresswoman Debbie Dingell on 89.1 WEMU, and I want to move our conversation to the matter of redistricting, because it's about to happen. New census figures show Michigan had a slight gain in population over the last decade, but not enough to prevent it from losing a congressional representative. One of the ways voter suppression occurs is having congressional district lines drawn by one party in power. Michigan has now appointed an independent commission to try and avoid repeating those mistakes. But with the loss of that congressional seat, there will most certainly be a shift in what areas of the state the 13 remaining members of Congress will represent. How might that affect your 12th district?
You know, I simply don't know. While we got the first round of census numbers, we have not gotten the detail about where the population shifts have been. An independent commission will hopefully make this a nonpartisan redistricting process. We know they're paying attention to communities of interest. So I have to see where they end up drawing the lines. I suspect that a significant part of the 12th district will still exist. We do have some high population areas. And I'm glad that we have a nonpartisan commission drawing these lines so that people will have someone representing them that truly represents their ideas. And I think I have a very diverse district. I think I've got one of the most diverse districts in the country, quite frankly. When you take the Down Rivers, which did vote and support Donald Trump, they're good, hard working people, UAW members, and it goes to Ann Arbor, which is a very progressive town. I talk to everybody. I meet with everybody. It's why I'm so sensitive to where there are different feelings, different life perspectives, different life experiences, different concerns, different needs. I think that makes you a good representative.
One of the possibilities is that a new district might pit you against Republican Tim Walberg. In the last three elections, he beat former Saline mayor and Democratic State Representative Gretchen Driscoll. You have some advantages as a candidate that Driscoll did not, higher name recognition and congressional experience among them. Do you have any hesitation in running against a formidable, stable, and long-serving Republican opponent should that come to pass?
You know, I'm not going to start speculating on what we don't know. Right now, I plan on running for re-election. I hope I don't have to run against anybody that I know and serve with. And I'll take each day as it comes and see how the lines are drawn, and we'll make my decision based on that.
I will most certainly look forward to our next conversation, and thank you so much for the time today.
Thank you, David.
That is 12th District Democratic Congresswoman Debbie Dingell. I'm David Fair, and this is your community NPR station, 89.1 WEMU-FM and WEMU-HD1 Ypsilanti.